Well, one of the world's foremost experts on intention and experiments, Lynn McTaggart, back with us. Her latest work, The Power of Eight, Harnessing the Miraculous Energies of a Small Group to Heal Others, Your Life, and the World. We need the world to heal right now. We're going to be back with Lynn McTaggart in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Lynn McTaggart with us for the next couple hours, one of the central voices in the new consciousness movement. She is the author of several books, including The Field and The Intention Experiment and the new one, The Power of Eight. Lynn is the editorial director of What's Doctors Don't Tell You, and she is also the architect of the intention experiments that we've talked about on this program quite a bit. She's a member of both the Transformational Leadership Council, launched by Jack Canfield, and the Evolutionary Leaders, launched by Deepak Chopra. Lynn McTaggart back on Coast to Coast. Lynn, what a great time to have you on. Welcome back.
No, thanks, George. It's great to be back with you.
Great work, too, by the way. And we're going to get into the title, which I think is very important to all this. But, man, isn't this world gone nuts lately?
Oh, my goodness. It's just shocking to see what's going on everywhere in the world. And, of course, I'm over here in the UK, and we're having the same kinds of weird breakdowns in every way. So, yeah, it's been a feeling of mine, a growing feeling, that we have to do some things ourselves, basically.
Lynn, is there concerns in London over what's happening here at the United States in terms of all this, what appears to be chaos?
Oh, there's concern about the political situation. There's concern about the environmental situation and all of the, the giant hurricanes, the floods, all of the things going on. And, the political gridlock and the anger and the polarization, absolutely. And there's sympathy for the people.
Yeah, there's no question. Now, you wrote that book, The Intention Experiment. It inspired, I think, millions of people all around the planet in worldwide healing projects. Tell me the results and how you got into that. And then we're going to talk about The Power of Eight, that interesting title for your new work.
Well, I started it essentially, George, as a skeptic. I have a background as an investigative reporter. That's where I came from.
That's right.
I mean, I started out life doing busting baby selling rings. Those were my first types of jobs. And so when I got into writing about medicine and then got writing it about consciousness and why things like spiritual healing might work, there was a lot of information from scientists that thoughts are a thing that can affect other things. And also, this was the time of a lot of stuff about the law of attraction and The Secret. But the investigative reporter in me said, what can you do with this? If thoughts are so powerful, why are we using this to manifest a parking space? Why don't we use this to start healing things, big things in the world, like can we cure cancer with our thoughts? Can we stop wars with our thoughts? And I also wondered whether or not having a lot of people thinking the same thought at the same time would magnify that effect. So I thought, I'm going to put this to the test. I'm going to create the biggest experiment in the world. And I knew I had a lot of contacts with many prestigious scientists in consciousness research.
Sure do.
And I also had a lot of readers because the field was in 30 languages. So I thought, if I just put them together and have them come on my website every so often and do this kind of thought experiment, I'll have the biggest global laboratory in the world. So that's what I've done since 2007. We've run about 30 of them so far. Everything from, very subtle effects on a leaf, to trying to make plants grow faster, to changing and purifying water, changing the pH and other things, to lowering violence and peace, creating peace in war-torn areas, and finally to trying to heal somebody with PTSD. And of those 30 experiments, George, 26 have demonstrated positive, mostly significant effects. Now, to put that in perspective, there's no prescription drug out there that has that kind of track record.
No, and this is beyond astronomical odds.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's gazillion to one odds that this could be just chance.
Just so when you started doing these intention experiments, did they surprise you? Did the results surprise you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was probably less convinced it was going to work than my editor did. I was not sure. I put a lot of qualifiers in the book, but I was willing to give it a go and really to put my neck on the line with it because I wanted to find out how far we could take it. So I was really shocked by a lot of things, but one of them was just the fact that distance didn't matter. And also, we didn't have to send a thought to the thing, only a representation of the thing. For instance, one of my seed experiments, which was done with the University of Arizona, Dr. Gary Schwartz, I ran this 6 times. And each time, the scientists would create 4 sets of seeds, A, B, C, D. We would randomly choose one set. Scientists wouldn't know which one we chose. They will have just sent us the photos of the seeds. And if I was giving a talk somewhere or with my audience over the internet, I would run this experiment. So the first time I ran it, I was in Sydney, Australia, speaking before a group of about 700 people. And we sent intention to one of the target seeds that we'd chosen. And the scientists, we told them they were done. They planted the seeds. They measured them 5 days later. And the seeds we sent intention to grew significantly higher than the controls. Now, just unpack this for a second, George. I'm not sending, and my audience aren't sending intention to the thing itself. We're sending intention to a photograph of the thing. Plus, we're in Sydney, Australia, and the seeds are in Tucson, Arizona, 8,000 miles away. So that gave me the idea that when we come together as a group, we create a kind of psychic internet, and that we can travel any kind of distance. And we can send something just to a symbol of the thing, and it'll still work.
When Hurricane Irma was picking up steam, I did one of these intention experiments based on the things you've taught us.
Oh.
And we used the audience, and I'm not going to say we did this, but it dropped from a category 5 down to a 1, or it would have devastated Florida.
Well, it's very interesting. I think there's something to it. We've done four experiments on lowering violence in violent areas or war-torn areas. And every time the results have demonstrated, a significant lowering. Now, as you say, it could be coincidence. But if you keep doing this over and over and over again, this starts getting very compelling. And there's certainly been many informal intention experiments I've run with people on weather. And some of my students have run on their weather, trying to make more rain and things like that. But again, make for some sort of compelling story. But what we've tried to do is to show it with working with a scientist at Penn State or University of California or University of Arizona. And actually quantified it with controls and all of that in very robust scientific studies.
What is it, Lynn? What is it out there that makes this happen, makes this work?
That's the $24,000 question, eh? A lot of scientists are basically now saying that consciousness is a giant sea of energy, essentially. It's what I call the field, and that we tap into this as individuals, and that as a collective, we tap in and essentially we amplify the power. And that what we're doing really is tuning in rather than projecting out. And so think about your brain as not being, and your mind and consciousness as not being locked inside your head, but as being something like a television station that beams out information to the universe and also pulls in information like a television set. And so perhaps we are just tapping into this giant collective consciousness. It's not anything we know for sure, but we also know too from scientific studies that we're beings of light. We send out a very subtle current of light emissions, called biophoton emissions. And it could well be that thoughts are another element of these little, this little current of light. We also know other living things are sending this light back. And so almost synchronicitously, so as though you're having a conversation of light. And we know we're beaming out 24/7. I mean, in many experiments I've demonstrated that all of our thoughts are beaming out there. And so when we focus them on something in particular, it may magnify the power.
Now, the new book is called The Power of Eight. Explain that title.
Okay. This all came about by accident, George. And actually, it's taken me 10 years to write about this because I was quite freaked out about it. When I started doing the intention experiment, I thought to myself, well, I should run workshops because, you know, that's what people in this area do. And remember, I come from a reporting background, so I'm not a personal development trainer. I don't run workshops. So I was talking with my husband, and I was saying, well, how do we show intention like we're doing it with the big studies in a workshop? Oh, I know. Let's put people in groups of about eight, and we'll have them send healing intention to a member of the group with some sort of health challenge. And my husband, who's also a journalist, goes, yeah, power of eight. I like it. Catchy. So we have our first workshop. We put people in groups of eight. We ask them to do this and that. I'm making it up essentially as I go along, saying hold hands, hold the same intention, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I figure the next day when they come back for the next day and they talk about their experiences, they're going to tell me it feels a little bit like having a facial or a massage, a feel-good exercise. So they line up one by one. We hand them the microphone, and they stand up and they say things like this. I've had IBS my whole life. It's completely gone and cleared. I feel really great. I've had migraines. This is the first morning I've woken up without a headache. I have arthritis in my hip, completely pain completely gone. And on and on and on. I was dumbfounded because I am not a healer. I'm not like an Eric Pearl. I never said that I was.
Right.
And I was also upset by it in a sense because I thought it was going to undermine the serious business I was doing with my intention experiments. Nevertheless, in every workshop I ran from then until now, we had the same situation. People, one after another, lining up with kind of miraculous healings. So we've had a woman with cataracts say that they're 80% better. We've had a woman with multiple sclerosis show up the next day without her crutches. We've had a woman with scoliosis whose back felt so much straighter that she had to change the rearview mirror in a car. We've had people with all kinds of pain and disability report feeling better, being pain-free, et cetera, et cetera. And I was, as I said, not only shocked and dumbfounded, but also a little upset by this. So I buried the lead of this story, essentially, and for years just focused on my main purposeful thing, which is the intention experiments. But a few years ago, I started feeling like I have to find out why this is working. This is crazy. And so I embarked on another journey, which was really to try to figure out why this was working from every possible perspective, and also to test it myself.
Well, by doing it, in testing it yourself, the results were remarkable, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, I did two kinds of tests. I mean, first of all, I created my own little Petri dish, my own little study. I decided to invite a batch of people, and I had 250 of them, to do a year-long project with me, a master class. So I would spend 7 weeks doing teleseminars and teaching them how to do intention and this and that and work in groups. And then I put them in groups of eight, and I studied them for an entire year. And I looked at their, you know, I monitored everything happening in their life from month to month to month. And it was incredible, George, because we had people with, I had a woman with chronic fatigue. She completely reversed that. A guy with lifelong depression, completely over it. A woman with vitiligo, repigmented. A woman regained most of her hearing. And aside from a lot of physical healings, people were healing their lives. They were, a lot of people got their dream job and left their kind of workaday jobs. Mm-hmm. Other people restored estranged relationships with fathers, husbands, sisters, things like that. Many people started up their, you know, dream enterprise. They started a new business and it was going really well. Other people developed a new life purpose. It was extraordinary. But one thing was for sure, of the people who continued to meet with their group week after week after week, pretty much 100% of them had some sort of miraculous change in their life.
That's dramatic.
And so we were trying to figure this out, and I finally subjected this whole thing to a scientific study. So Life University, which is the largest chiropractic university, heard me speak once about this and essentially put their psychology department at my disposal. And we worked with a neuroscientist and ran experiments studying the brain waves of people who do this, and you know, the senders, not the receivers, the senders themselves. And we found an amazing result. All of the parts of the brain that sort of govern self from not self, like the parietal lobes of the brain, they tell you where you end and the rest of the universe begins, they were all turned way down. So that what I was getting from people all the time was this explanation that I felt like I was in an altered state. I felt like I had this amazing sense of oneness with everyone in the group. You know, I was not aware of time and space. I was tingling. I was crying uncontrollably. All of that would be consistent with what they saw. They also saw a turning down in a lot of other areas, particularly the frontal lobes, the executive portion of the brain that would be involved in things like worry, doubt, negativity. That was all turned way down too. And what was really fascinating, George, is that this was like the brainwave signatures of a Sufi master or a monk in ecstatic prayer, identical to the same signatures measured by a guy called Dr. Andrew Newberg, who used to work at the University of Pennsylvania and studied these kind of ecstatic states. It was identical. But the difference was, with my guys, they didn't have to do years of practice and priming. They didn't have 2 hours worth of, you know, getting into the state. They didn't have to take ayahuasca or, you know, go into a sweat lodge or put their heads between their knees. They just had to get a group. And all they'd had was a 15-minute explanation of how to do it from me. What? So this had to be some sort of fast track, essentially, to the miraculous.
What if it wasn't 8, but 7 or 9 participants? What would have happened?
To be honest, it can work too. 8 is kind of an optimum number, but there's no sacred geometry there, no magical thing. When you get down to about 5, it's a little bit too small. And after about 12, it's too big.
What about one powerful person? Could he or she do that?
There are plenty of single powerful people who are, you know, intention masters. I've met a lot of them.
Hold on, Lynn. We're going to take a quick break. Let's come back and talk more about this. Phone calls with Lynn McTaggart next hour on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Lynn McTaggart. We'll take calls next hour. Her latest work is called The Power of 8. But you were saying 7 or 9, it works too, but 5 is too low.
Well, you know, what I experimented with was small groups, and it seemed to be that 8 was a really good number. But, as I say, as long as it's a group of a reasonable size, and I think you're really talking about 6 and upward, you can have an effect. And I think once it gets beyond 12, it becomes a little bit unwieldy, but it doesn't have to be hard and fast 8.
You've got an experiment that you're going to run at the end of this week called the American Peace Intention Experiment. Tell us about that.
Well, you were talking about, you know, everything being a mess and the country being so divided, George. And this was one of my ideas. I thought America really needs our help now, probably more than any other place at the moment, because what America does affects so much else in the world. And the Congress doesn't seem to be able to get over the terrible polarization we have, and certainly everything just seems to be getting worse on that front. So I decided to do a giant American peace intention experiment, the biggest one I've ever run. And I would target the most violent place in America. I'm not going to reveal that target yet, George, because I don't want people to start intending.
It's Chicago. Early. It's Chicago.
No, it's not Chicago.
All right.
There's some place that's even more violent. But I don't want to tell people about it yet because I don't want people to start thinking about it yet and intending for it yet, because I have a team of scientists.
It'll skew the results. Okay.
Sorry?
It'll skew your results, right?
Exactly. So we're going to do this. Now, there's a good reason, and I'm asking people all around the world, and we've got tens of thousands of people signing up, AmericanIntentionExperiment.com. But there's a real good reason for this. I mean, I'm hoping we'll have an effect. We've run 4 peace intention experiments before this. All of them have seemed to have had an effect. We lowered violence in Sri Lanka. We sent intention to 2 provinces in southern Afghanistan once. And then we did the Washington, D.C. one. I did it with you. And
that's right.
In every instance, we seemed to lower violence. We looked at a long timeline before and afterward, and it was pretty compelling. So I hope we do that. But that's not even the bigger purpose here. When I ran the 9/11 experiment, it was the 10th anniversary of 9/11. I don't know about you, but I was pretty tired of seeing those towers, the burning towers, falling down again on every anniversary. So I thought maybe we need an alternative, a more positive alternative. So I decided to do a big intention experiment, but not only to have my Western audience. I mean, and I do have people who are, I call it Western, but they're from all over the world, but my American audience too. But I also have spoken a number of times in the Middle East, and there's a guy I know there who's like the Deepak Chopra of the Middle East. He's a big peace advocate, and he's got tens of thousands of followers, and he's hosted me a number of times. So I asked him to invite his people too. So we had an experiment that both had Americans, you know, Westerners and Arabs participating together, you know, the hated enemy. And we had the experiment in both English and Arabic. And it was really amazing what happened, because while the experiment was going on and afterward, I had an instant messenger broadcast as well, you know, we were broadcasting it on a daily broadcast as well as the experiment itself. And the two sides started writing to each other. They apologized to each other, and we had a big apology from them and from the Arabs, and they also started forgiving each other. And it was really incredible because it was kind of ending the war in another way. And so this was the big idea for the American Peace Intention Experiment. If people come on this, what I've discovered is their lives change. And that was the big thing, too, that happened with all of the peace experiments and all of my big experiments. When I started surveying the participants, big things happened to them as a outcome of being part of this giant experiment. Their lives became more peaceful. They started, I mean, the first time I did this with 2008 in Sri Lanka, I was just dumbfounded about this, too, because I surveyed people just to find out how they did. You know, did they enjoy their experience? Were they able to get on the web page, et cetera? And I got back thousands of responses saying things like this. You know, I felt I was wired up to a higher network. I felt like I was in the tractor beam from Star Trek. I was sobbing uncontrollably. I had energy up and down my arms. You know, my arms were feeling like I had electricity going through them. You know, that kind of feeling, almost like an altered state. And also they reported on things being more peaceful in their own lives, like making up with people they disagreed with, like connecting with people they hadn't connected with for a long time and maybe had been estranged from. You know, and the biggest thing was, you know, they were starting to feel love for everybody in the world. They were hugging strangers, essentially. And some people experienced physical types of healings, too. So, again, it was just as astonishing as the Power of Eight groups. But there was this huge mirror effect, a big mirror effect, on the people themselves who had participated. So, going back to the American Peace Experiment, that's the idea of it, is the effect on people taking part, healing their lives, making their lives more peaceful, and that being creating a ripple effect. So that's my big hope, is that something like this will happen, and in some small way, try to heal some of the division and the anger going on now.
Scientifically, Lynn, how do you explain it, scientifically? That it does work, we both know that, but how do you explain it with science? Can you?
Yeah, I can. There's a thing in our body called the vagus nerve, George, and it's the biggest nerve in our body. It goes from the top of our neck and, you know, from the spine and weaves its way through all of the major organs of the body. And one of the things it does is turn on things like the hormone oxytocin, which is what people have called the love hormone. You know, it's the thing that gets turned on when mothers are caring for their babies or a couple are together or something like that. And the nerve itself, the vagus nerve, is almost like the love nerve because it gets activated when we're feeling compassion for other people. And what's been discovered, which is so interesting, in the studies of University of California, when they looked at a group of volunteers looking at pictures of the world's victims and doing something, you know, thinking about something altruistic, caring for them, their vagus nerves fired, but also they felt more connected to people not like them. And that's what could be going on here. When you're engaged in this kind of altruistic activity, you know, we're all coming together to heal a violent place in America, and you're also connecting in the group, a giant group, even virtually, that activates that nerve. And it has this kind of virtuous circle effect of continuing to have a good effect on the immune system. You know, it continues to affect the immune system, and it also continues to affect our feelings of being connected with people not like us. So imagine if we had a lot of Republicans and Democrats all participating in this experiment, George, you know, they would start feeling more connected to the other party.
Should have done it with the healthcare plan, see what would happen.
Absolutely. We need to do it with everything that's going on in America.
They both need to get together and make it work.
Absolutely.
Whatever it is. Now, let's talk about the Power of Eight as it was occurring during the days of Jesus. You say that he somehow used some of these techniques. What are some of the techniques?
Well, here was the interesting thing. I was trying to figure out, when I was going through this whole investigation and my own doubt about it and saying, wait a minute, no. Or if this is working and it seems to be working over and over again, somebody had to have thought of this before me. It wasn't me who came up with this. So I started looking at esoteric religions first, and then indigenous healing practices. And that led me, George, to a forgotten sermon from a guy called Charles Spurgeon from the early 1900s, Christian sermon. And he talked about how the Bible had been slightly mistranslated. And what he was talking about was in the part of the Bible called the Acts, which talk about the apostles and how they set up the church and how they were first healing after Jesus ascended. And they talked about the fact that the apostles were told by Jesus to pray together with one accord. And if they did, they would be able to heal themselves and others with one accord. Now, that turns out to be a very anemic translation of the original Hellenic Greek. The original Hellenic Greek was a word called homothumidon, which is basically an adverb that is used in music to talk about a passionate sound that's a single unity. Like Think of a Beethoven symphony. You've got individual instruments, but they're all coming together for this collective sound. That's what it was. And what he was really talking about, it would seem, was pray together it passionately with one voice. And so that gave me the idea that perhaps Jesus had been talking about this praying together. Now, there's lots of prayer groups, plenty of prayer groups and prayer circles that happen. But one thing that distinguished what we were doing is, and it was totally by accident, I told people, hold the same intention statement. Devise it together. You know, our intention is to free Jane Doe of all pain in her left hip. You know, something very specific
sure.
is what we prayed
Easily
for.
Easily trackable.
Yes, trackable. And the big thing was our intention, holding the same intention statement together, seemed to be important for me. And so that was one technique. And, of course, another aspect is the group. You know, I started thinking about, well, maybe there was an important thing about the 12, because one of the first things the apostles did was replace Judas, you know, who had hung himself by then, who betrayed Jesus after he betrayed Jesus. Now, a lot of people
some
have
say,
always said...
Some say that he didn't betray him. He was part of the deal, I guess.
You know, I don't know. You know, who knows? Who knows? But he hung himself anyway, and the apostles replaced him with someone who had not followed Jesus, you know, who hadn't been part of that whole thing. But something was important about maintaining the 12. Now, a lot of people say it was the 12 tribes of Israel, but maybe there was something in the number, too. Maybe it had to be a specific number. Who knows? But what you do see in the Acts is when they prayed together as one, and they were healing people as one. So, and they created, you know, and performed certain miracles as one. So that's one of the aspects of it. Connection, some sort of connection is another important part of it. When I put people together, again by accident it was, I told them all to create a circle and hold hands. They could also put the person who's being healed in the center of the circle and all put a hand on him like the spokes of the wheel. But I just had this feeling, that's all it was at the time, that there had to be some sort of unbroken connection. Now, what I know now from running the intention experiments is that we create this virtually. And I've also run many, many teleseminars where I put people into virtual groups of eight on my calls. You know, they have the technology to do this.
Yeah.
So they're connected with people who are anywhere around the world on their phone call. They've got their little group. They do their intention together with the same techniques, but it works just as well virtually.
Do you have to believe in the ability of this to work in order for it to work for you?
Well, that's a really great question, George. And I do a thing called Intention of the Week, and we've done intentions, you know, where people write in, and if they've got someone with a health challenge, we send intention to this person on every Sunday at I guess it's about noontime, East Coast time. And we've had babies and fetuses, you know, defy all medical predictions. So obviously they haven't given their permission or know about it. But I had a really interesting case. While I was running that year-long master class, a father had written in about his stepson, his name was Luke, and he was 15 years old. And he'd broken up with his first major girlfriend. And in a fit of adolescent existential angst, he'd chucked himself off of a 40-foot structure onto hard ground.
Oh.
I mean, crazy, right? And he'd broken every bone of his body. You know, he was a mess. He had brain damage. He had, you know, nerve damage, everything. Jeez. The doctors didn't think he was going to live. So I asked my group, you know, the master class, to set up a little healing vigil for Luke. So they would send intention, and they did it three times, three Sundays in a row. And it was really amazing. You know, the father kept up a running commentary of what was happening with Luke to me. And Luke healed miraculously. You know, he was whizzing around on a wheelchair in a couple of weeks, and a few weeks after that, he was back home. It was really quite amazing. And, you know, he had made an amazing recovery and had gone from really suicidal state of mind to very positive, and there seemed to be a big uplift right at the time, each time we were doing intention. But I know one thing, that it wasn't the power of belief on his part, and I know it wasn't, you know, I know it wasn't a placebo effect, because Luke, like most 15-year-olds, thought his parents' belief in the power of intention was stupid.
Yet it worked.
But it seemed to work. Now, it could have been good doctoring, but it certainly defied all their expectations.
By the way, Matthias was the additional apostle.
Oh, thank you for that. Thank you. Interesting about having to replace the 12. But, you know, there's another part of that Luke story that's really interesting, George, which is what happened to the participants themselves who were doing the intending. Remember I told you this was a year-long group, and I was studying them month by month, what's going on with them. And a lot of them were improving from the get-go. But some of them, nothing was working for them. Their intentions weren't working. And one of those was a woman called Andy.
All right, hold on for a second. Let's get back into that, Lynn, and we'll take phone calls with you as we talk about the power of eight next on Coast to Coast AM.